and welcome to Starter Set. My name, Ed Sylvester. This is...
Sam Bradley.
And welcome to the show that takes you deeper into the pages of Dungeons & Dragons. Hello, Sam.
Hello.
How are you doing?
All right. I'm not bad. Yeah, not bad. Getting on.
Excellent.
Doing stuff. How about you? How is your week in D&D been, my friend?
Yeah, I can't really ask you that often now, because obviously you've taken a little step back from our weekly game.
Yeah.
But my week has been... I've had two games. Two games, Eddie.
Ooh,
that's what they call me.
Look at me. I'm just drowning in all the games. I have no responsibility. Games. Give me games.
Lovely. Oh, put it in my lovely cauldron. Lovely game cauldron. Yum, yum, yum.
Okay. So... Yeah, it was fun, actually. So, obviously, the Tuesday game, which is the one that you played in, you died last episode, or last week.
How was that? How was the fallout from that?
Interesting, to say the least. So,
the
emotionally connected characters, unfortunately, couldn't make it to the session.
Because one of them was fucking dead. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, one of them obviously expired, and then the other one, he had real-life commitments, which is fair enough. So, it was left to... Zebulon, who as a necromantic wizard kind of is like, death's just a, you know, it's not really a big deal, I'll deal with this,
but
I understand I'll understand that other people have to deal with this emotionally, so I've read books on it but have not in no way you know, really discovered empathy or anything like that. So he made a simulacrum of yourself, your character.
He's done fucking
in
what's he
a
done
a simulacrum, a copy in the form of a sock puppet.
A sock puppet?
Yes.
Right, okay.
A grief sock puppet that people could talk to like it was your character. And the rogue then proceeded to use this, like Sooty and Sweep, to basically receive all of your gear. What's that, Cormoran?
Fair enough.
You want me to have all of your stuff?
Okay, that's fair enough.
And then we're all like, well, we have to, you know, if that's how he's dealing with his grief, that's how we have to do it.
Oh, lovely and tasteful.
Yeah, it was good. It was good fun. So that was great. Mm. And then Thel's on a revenge rampage. So we've got to direct that towards some evil
actual
people.
Things that need to be killed, yeah.
Yeah, we actually spent a long amount of time at the end going like, right, so who are the bad guys? That was... You know,
yeah,
and sitting down and figuring out who we have to punch, because at the moment it's been a bit of a roller coaster, and I think we finally all sort of snapped
just a
and
bit.
Gone, right, let's do something about all this bollocks that keeps happening to us.
Yeah, but I like how slow this group is, because if you can spin this out until June, I'll probably have the time to jump back in. So just keep, you know, like, oh, what's that? That there grass looks interesting. Let's spend a couple of hours looking at that.
Would you say this grass is slightly blue? Yes, it probably is. It's probably magical. Oh, let's eat the magic grass. What happens? It's nothing. It's just grass.
We've all been there. I tell you what I did get to do, actually, speaking of D&D weeks.
Oh, good. Yeah, tell us.
Fizzbands arrived. The Treasury of Dragons.
Oh, that's a good shout. Yes.
And do you know what? I was not expect... Not that I wasn't looking forward to it, but I kind of didn't know what to expect, really. I didn't know if it's going to be like a... If it was going to be lots of lore, or if it was going to be subclasses, because I kind of only really buy the books for the subclass and the character stuff, and then just peruse the lore just to, you know, skim things out. I don't really play the adventures, but I was pleasantly surprised. There's a good mix. There's some really good little subclasses in there. There's a shitload of lore, but it's not, you know, like, it's not like Mordekainen's lore where you're just like, oh, let this end. It's like proper sort of little digestible nuggets. I think they know by now you're just going to skim it off. But I would they're knocking it out of the park at the minute. Between this and Witchlight, I think... and they've got Strixhaven, haven't they? The Curriculum of Chaos coming out
soon. Which is obviously a magic linking product. So
yeah, and that kind of ruined that for me. I thought I was going to be like Candlekeep, but a university. I was really excited. But I think in terms of... Yeah, Fizzbands is worth picking up. I've really enjoyed it. How have you found it?
Do you know what? You're 100% right in your little breakdown there, your little review. I agree. It's basically a book full of stuff that people will use. in like the smallest thing. You look at it and you go, I can put that in my game, I can put that in my game, and every part of it can enhance a game. Admittedly, you probably need to be slightly dragon-centric for a lot of it, but what it can do, I think, is give you a platform to make any campaign dragon-centric, and it would definitely... Yeah. If you're one of these people who wants to like run Rise of Tiamat and Horde of the Dragon Queen, those two adventures, this kind of... Because and I'm getting a little bit into actually our episode today, but Fizzbands, with those two books, can basically... It'll allow you to pave over the glaring issues that are those first two books, because they were published before Wizards finalized, or they were all written up before Wizards finalized the actual rules. So the guys over at... Which is, you know...
So it's like the New Mutants of fucking D&D books.
Yeah, just like they're there and everybody knows about them, and you can, you know, they, you can experience them, but it's very difficult to run as a DM, and it's like... It's a weird experience as a player, I would say, a little bit for both of those two. But Fizzbands gives you something really nice, which allows you to basically confidently smear over the problems.
Do dragons, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Which is really what you want from those two books of, like, it's dragons.
Parts 1-3.
Yeah.
Should we play some ads, given that we kind of started talking about it anyway, but shall we continue with the buyer's guide after some advertisements?
Yes, let's do that. So this week we're looking at adventure modules after these messages.
Since the dawn of time, there have been storytellers who teach through their stories. These myths give rise to fundamental truths, and these truths shape our collective experience. Yet these myths are not something of the past, and today they engage us more fully in the story itself. Video games allow us to live the lives of our favorite myths. My name is BlueCrew86, host of Focus Fire Chat, and I want to invite you to explore our modern-day myths with us. Join with us as we explore the stories, the mythologies of the Destiny franchise, as well as other games. Let's explore together.
And welcome back. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
So, yes, we are talking adventures. There's a metric lot of them out there. So the real question on this, I suppose, well, basically, because I've been in it from the beginning and Sam's obviously come up later on, it means that he's got more of a compressed financial output to basically catch up. So... you haven't had neither the time nor the finances to be able to pick up all of these books, right? Because ultimately,
or the need,
like, yeah, and that as well. Because obviously,
this is going to be a real sort of chalk and cheese thing here. Because not only do I don't obviously have the money to go out and go, oh, I think I'm going to try adventure books, and I'm going to buy three because that's like £100 worth, probably of books.
Yeah,
I have, and I'm not trying to position myself as some homebrew Matt Mercer fucking, hey man, just go. It's literally just how I've entered the game and how I've been relatively successful in DMing and world building. I have neither the want nor the means nor the patience to get into adventure modules. It's just not my jam. And that's not against any of them, and it's not against people who play adventure modules, because I get not everyone has the time to build like a really a rich or kind of fanciful adventure, and I get that, and I'm not taking the piss out of anyone that doesn't have that and prefers to use adventure books because of time or because of necessity, but I can't be doing with them. I don't know where I'd start if I had one. I'm like a mule with a spinning top.
Yeah, so I mean, you're right. So the first statement there.
How did that feel to say that?
It's fine. I'm okay with that. I can allow you to be right occasionally.
Oh, let me roll it back. I can't be too nice to you.
Yeah.
Click, 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 click.
I'll find some way to undermine you as part of the episode. Don't you worry about that. You're right. So the adventure modules, they are categorically there for you know, the crew where you want to play D&D, you've got a limited amount of time, so you want to sit down and you've got 4 hours, potentially as a DM, you've got like an hour where you can do in the week between sessions where you can catch up and be ready to rock and roll. And that's what they're there for, I think, honestly. They all add things, and I obviously talk about stealing stuff from other areas for your own homebrews, and they every single one has their own contributing factor to something else. But yeah, you're right. You don't need them. You definitely don't need them.
That's the buyer's guide. Next week we'll be doing something else. I think what my question really is, you can nick stuff from anywhere.
Yeah.
You can nick stuff from any kind of lore books. You can nick stuff from Player's Handbook, or you can use it as jump off points, you know, or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in this episode, what we've got to do is somehow find the ones that exist, the ones that are richest and work well as an adventure book.
Yeah.
So if you've got no time, but you want to be a DM, right, and you can be, not doing homebrew all the time does not make you a bad DM. Huge disclaimer.
Yeah, right? No, you categorically can, not.
You know, like, you think of yourself as a director making a film that someone else has written. Right?
Yeah.
So I think what we should look at is what ones are worth playing. What are the best mm-hmm. adventures? What are the ones that have those twists and turns and da-da-da-da-da? I mean, my first question to you is, how do they work? Because the concept of me reading, okay, so you have to make sure that after the first hour they're at fucking Raymond's Sushi Bar because that's where the goblin's going to get his ass out or whatever. I mean, I don't know if that's a real one, but Tarthage, season 3. How do they work?
Yeah, okay. So that's actually a pretty good question, Sam.
Twice. Get
twice,
it.
Yeah. So basically, the way to think about most of the adventures and the really good ones are loose plot points that you have to hit, I think is the best way to describe it.
They're stepping stones of story.
Yeah, stepping stones of story with set pieces that the stones need to lead to.
Right.
The best ones, I find, are an amalgamation of the two, where you can have those stepping stones and those set pieces, but they're all interconnected. So you know in, like, you know Takeshi's Castle, this is a very weird reference, where they have to run across the stepping stones and some of them are like droppy out ones, but you can use mm-hmm. that to potentially fall over onto the ones where they don't drop out and you don't fall in the water.
Sure.
The good adventures have less of the droppy out ones, so you can go sideways if you need to without everything falling out from underneath you, and then mm-hmm. you're stuck in this environment where you can't proceed anymore.
Right. Okay. Yeah? So it is kind of make sure they get here at some point, but if they want to mm-hmm. go to a bazillion shops, well, hey, there we got maps on page 200, and there's a list of NPCs, and no doubt you've there's the homebrew in me again. But you know, there's stuff that you want to maybe put in that kind of makes sense, or maybe there's not, but there's plenty of shit for you to do anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of the time, people without knowing that they're doing or creating homebrew content will put their own homebrew content into any of these adventure modules.
Yeah, of course they will.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the ones that do it, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I have to caveat that, because this is going out on the internet.
Yeah, what's the criteria that you're judging by? Like, what are your three? Because we got to have some kind of metric.
Sure.
You can't just say, fucking,
these are the best ones.
I like the Rime of the Frostmaid, and that's the one that everyone keeps buggering themselves about, isn't it? Everyone loves that one. I hear people say that everyone likes that one.
You're right. So, I find the best ones, a lot of the time, have a large environment for you to explore, but that environment is limited, and it's not limited by invisible wall, it's limited by something that's, you know, quasi reasonable, if that makes sense.
Something they really want, so it stops them going sideways too much. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's the objective of the adventure.
Yeah, so the objective is right. one that drives this party forwards. It's really clear. Anybody can get behind it, because that, a lot of the time, is a bit of an issue sometimes in these mm-hmm. adventures. You go, why the hell do I want to... You know, I've written this character. Why does that even affect me? I yeah. can just walk away from this place into mm-hmm. somewhere else in the world that exists and go, bye, bye, bye. So there's one. Number two, and this is quite important, actually, is... the layout of the book and like where stuff is.
Yeah. And does it flow as you're DMing? Do you have to flick?
Yeah.
You know,
backwards and forwards. The resources are in front of you when you need them.
I want to buy a pint of milk. Hang on. Ah, everyone's dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's usability. So we've got objective, usability. What's your third criteria?
And then I think it's theme, really. You know, it's the story. It's the that's sort of a little different from the objectivity, because the objectivity is why does your character get excited?
It's what it's about.
The theme
is it gothic horror, or is it fucking aliens on the moon, or you know,
the theme is why should you as a player or a DM get excited, and how well delivered, I guess.
What creative opportunities does it open up?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right.
Which is, we're approaching this from quite a scientific point of view, Sam.
Well, let me ruin all that, if I may.
Yeah.
So I come to a game, and you're like, as we did one session of Curse of Strahd campaign that sort of died. But we did have a session zero to that, and you were quite not like clinical about character creation, but it was like, right, we kind of need someone that fits this bill, and this bill. So
yeah,
here's some big pools, but you have to be in one of them.
Yes. So a lot of
approach that then?
Yeah, so a lot of the adventures give you adventure hooks to be able to chuck in there. I think the session zero is key on these points. I think you can quite easily go into a homebrew world without that, because you can just in the same way as you as a DM can just build your world around what's happening. Characters can also build themselves around what's happening, so they can turn up with a character sheet which doesn't have any link to the overall world at all. But as you play, you can almost do that thing where you go like, "Ah, oh, can I be part of this crew and have some history there?" And you go, "Yeah." And then now that's linked in, and that informs their background.
Okay.
Has to be solid and set with these guys, or with these adventures. So the session zero is so much more important, I think, because you have to sit down and go, "What do you want to explore as a player?"
Yeah.
You know, what sort of character do you want to be? Like, am I going to be able to give you a fun experience if you're a rogue and you want to do loads of manipulation of people and you want to do, like, you know, you really want to be rogue mastery mind, but actually this entire thing takes place in, I don't know, let's do the Out of the Abyss adventure, underground, everybody's gone insane, so your ability to do that manipulation might not feel as...
Yeah.
Impactful.
And I think there's probably like, so I come with that idea, you counter with, well, actually we're doing the Abyss one that you just said.
Yeah.
And I think any player that sort of says, well, I still want to do it anyway, it's like, well, you're not going to have as good a time.
Yeah.
Fucking,
I mean,
deal with it. It is my problem, but it's not my fault. Do you know what I mean?
Not as blunt as that, but yeah, there is a... Well, you've got to be prepared to meet halfway without a doubt, and most people obviously do that. So, yeah, let's get into... Because I'm aware that we've got about 10 minutes that we can go through the actual
ones. It's our show. We can talk for as long as we want. You're under this auspice that we are somehow held to this standard. All right.
All right.
Hold some books up then. Show me.
So, I've got my top three.
Right.
Okay.
So we got an objective. Oh fuck. Objective, usability, and theme. Overall tone, theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so what's the best one for objective?
The
thing that keeps everyone going forward and stops them opening a bread shop.
Okay, yeah, sure. So the good one for objective. I'm not sure if these have big time ones, but that might just be my personal choice. So I've got... So this is my third one. This is my third favourite adventure that I sort of would recommend. Is the Waterdeep Dragon Heist.
I hear about that a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. The clue is in the name of your objective.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heist. It's a heist book.
Oh, is it like stealing from the dragon?
Like
kind of Hobbit-y type thing.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's an oceans book. It's stealing from a big locked vault using magical means or non-magical means and all this sort of stuff.
Oh,
and
okay.
Explosives and things like that. And there are other people obviously trying to get to the same things.
So it's like Ocean's 11 type thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Ocean's probably 4 to 5, let's be realistic.
Yeah, very much so. The reason why it's quite good in that sense is yes, you've got that objective clearly laid out, but you've also got that limitation of Waterdeep. It's just set in this one city, so you don't have to do, as far as your DMing goes, you don't have to do much extra world building. You can just concentrate in one ecosystem, one environment. Yes, there's a lot of like moving cogs that are going on around, but I think it's easy to track those, and it makes the world feel richer because you're putting all the flavor in terms of the content into a smaller container.
Right, got it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's my good. That's That's all right. Very good direct objective-based one.
Okay, so best one for usability. What book is just the easiest to run in terms of you will not be flicking as much as you should, as much as you think you might be?
So this one is number two, and I haven't set this up this way. It just appears to have happened based upon our own preferences and what we've laid out. Apparently so. Tomb of Annihilation.
I hear about this one. That's got the fella on the front, isn't it, with the big stick?
You've played this one, Sam.
Have I?
Yeah. This is the one that Jiminy Hendrix was set in.
Oh, when I've been playing the game 3 weeks. Oh, you don't remember that? You played it for 6 weeks 3 years ago.
Hey, man. I remember the first line that my first character ever said. So, you know.
What did I say? Hang on. What did Jiminy say?
I have no idea.
No, me neither.
Probably, can I buy some booze, please? Or something along those lines.
Ooh, so lowbrow, aren't you, Sam? Okay, so what makes Tomb of Annihilation really usable?
So this is all about the handouts. Because it's set in a sandbox environment where you've got that big map and you've got that... You can basically give the map to the players, right? And they can kind of run where they're going themselves, and all you have to do is look at their map, know roughly where they are, compare that with your map, and then you're like, right, you're in a danger zone. You know what I mean? So in this environment, there's this potential for danger. In this environment, there's this potential for danger. And if you're not... The great thing is if you're not super prepared for that environment, nothing happens. And you can quite nicely say nothing happens, be overly descriptive about this jungle and the issues that are happening around it, and just move on. Because the whole idea of once you get in there and you move away from the main city is you can get lost, and it is scary, and it's a lot of random encounters, basically, as you move through this sandbox environment.
Yeah.
The back end of it gets a bit more direct and a bit harder in terms of the ability to run. But by that time, it's a big book. It's one of the largest, I think it is actually. No, Wild Beyond the Witchlight is the largest. So only recently. But it's a big book, so you've got a lot of content to go through there. So as you go through, you're almost leveling up your own DM chops. So if it's your first ever adventure,
yeah,
it's a really good one because you're either just in this sort of smallish city with these nice separated environments in terms of like districts, or you're in this jungle thing, and then you can sort of take it and you can run, and as your experience and confidence grows with the game and how to do that, the book can kind of like test you as you go through.
It opens out with you, right? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like any good video game RPG. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You start in small town, kill some rats, get slightly bigger, go to slightly bigger town, kill some bigger rats, go to bigger town.
So, our biggest criteria is the overall tone, why it makes it engaging for DMs and players and players alike, you know, I'm guessing it's your number one. What is it?
Strahd!
Oh, I played a session of that too.
Yes, yeah. Curse of Strahd is
vampires,
is
Barovia, and everyone else in between.
The gothic horror stuff. The theme is tight. It's really good. It's really easy. Everybody gets it. The way they do that sort of pervasive, continual horror stuff is fantastic.
Is it linked to Ravensloft at all, that kind of theme? Because there's a lot of that. I was just trying to think of the name of the book. It's one of the newer ones, isn't it?
It might
have been a re-release or whatever, but they released the Ravensloft book fairly recently.
So the Ravensloft is like this is all the like horrible environments that come under those. Barovia is one of them. And Strahd is the big vampire at the top. And also vampire, like, as far as lore and history goes, people and players already know these traits and tropes. So you can use... you can subvert them, but you can also use people's pre-existing ideas and thoughts on these things to be like, to support your own DMing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's stuff to link to in terms of how you describe stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You can go and watch Bram Stoker's and then be like, cool, loads of shadows move differently. Eyes in the sky.
Yes.
All that sort of stuff. Just enough to kind of freak people out and then bish, bash, boss. And it, as an adventure... you've got the bloody tarot reading at the beginning. That's so cool.
That was fucking great, actually. I really like that.
Like, the fact that you can sit down and that tarot reading actively affects the end environments where you're picking up certain items and things like that, and where you have the final showdown. The fact that you can have Strahd as a recurring bad guy, and he's not just like, I walk into a room and I just have to deal with this massive, horrific threat, which, some of them kind of deal with. It's really good. It's really, really good. The story's excellent. It's up there. It's my favourite. I'll give you a couple of honourable mentions.
Okay, go.
Wild Beyond the Witchlight, I can't give it a full glowing like yes, ready to go, because I haven't played it or had some experience with it. Out of the Abyss.
Right. Okay.
Both of those are very fun by the looks of it. Out of the Abyss. There's some really cool stuff there. There's some things which can accidentally just straight up kill you and you have a bad time because of that, and you've got
sorted.
These deep...
Do it.
Yeah. Well, you've got the all the demon princes basically running around in the Underdark, and if you've got like a dwarf or a drow or an elf player, they can really get integrated with that piece. As with all of these, actually, they tend to get supported by other books as well. So, like, Out of the Abyss gets supported really nicely by Morden Kainans, because they give you a load of lore on, like, the creatures that you see down there.
Ugh. Sorry, go on.
Curse of Strahd gets supported nicely with the Ravenloft book, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we've also said about the Tiamat, Hall of the Dragon, Dragon Queen, and Fizban's.
I tell you what, though, in terms of self-contained, in terms of the stuff that supports it and the adventure stuff, Eberron seems to be quite a mixed bag. Like, I remember Eberron was, weird enough, Eberron I think was the second book I got.
Yes, it was. Yeah, so it's,
and that, it has lots of races, and it has a couple of subclasses, and it has a few new monsters, and it has a whole beastry at the back, and it has maps, and factions, and lots, and a little bit of lore about factions, because there's all that stuff about the
Dragon Marks.
Yeah, and the elves. Remember the warrior elves with the double-bladed mm-hmm. scimitars?
Yep.
Oh, and there's an adventure in there.
Is there?
Yes, there is, I believe. There's a
star jobby in the back. Yes, yeah. You are right. There is a small one in there, isn't there?
Oh, he's 3 for 3. Yeah, there is an adventure in there as well. And I've never played it, so I don't know how big it is, but seems. Have you ever had any dealings? Because, like, I got Eberron because we did a bit of a series on it. I was like, oh, this stuff's probably going to inform Tarfage because it's a bit steampunky, but a bit sort of clandestine as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I never played Eberron. Have you ever had any dealings with it?
No, I haven't, I'm afraid. Nothing on that front. I've not messed around with it too much, but it has. Yeah, what is it?
Warforged are in there. Changelings are in there. There's a couple of different tiefling sub races, I believe, as well.
Yeah, the it definitely takes things in a slightly different dynamic, Eberron, and you can definitely tell that it's quite a big deal. I mean, it's definitely not an adventure book, so we'll cover that, I think, in next week's episode. Cause next week. Yeah, this is where we're going to look at those. We're going to look at those big lore bombs, which books can give you the sort of the big chops, the extra pieces for your games overall, things like Volos and all that sort of stuff.
Volos is fucking great. Sorry,
yeah, I know you're a big fan.
I love Volos so much.
It's a good one.
It's a good one.
Yeah, let's bring the show to a close, shall we, Sam?
Mm-hmm, let's do it.
Lovely stuff. So, as always, ladies and gents, you have been our listeners. We hope you have enjoyed the show. Roll well, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye. That's it. Sometimes you just goodbye.